of executive.
What that entailed was after the money had been paid, there are ways for a humanitarian effort to be expended in Cuba that are legal. And it was, well, maybe we should try and make it look like this. Maybe we should get a charity to have sponsored our trip. It doesn't work that way. And you can't do a business deal or a business transaction or a business trip and then say, oh, let's make it look like it's a humanitarian trip.
Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Kurt Eichenwald, thanks for joining us. We'll link to your piece at Newsweek, Vanity Fair. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland. Stay tuned. Coming up, it's Positively Revolting Talk Radio.
It's Johnny's birthday. It's Johnny's birthday.
That's right. It's time once again for Lennon Night, KBOO's annual all-night birthday party for John Lennon. It's a party and you're invited. Tune in this Friday night beginning at 9 p.m. and stick with us as long as you can because we'll be going till 6 in the morning. There'll be rarities, interviews, Beatles songs, and John and Yoko at their best. So tune in this Friday night, 9 p.m. till 6 a.m. for Lennon Night here on KBOO Portland.
Tune into KBOO Friday, September 30th from 8 to 9 p.m. for the Night of 1,000 PSAs.
Performed by the Kathleen Stevenson Retirement PSA Orchestra.
There's no need for that lard to go to waste.
Please visit girlsanddrinking.org for
weight. Parents, the good news is
I start to cough.
Even within the most trustworthy professions.
I don't want to be a piece of garbage.
There's someone.
This is the action.
Sounds like another concerned citizen.
We will enchant you with everyone's favorite radio treasure.
The PSA.
Played in a way you've never heard before.
All at once.
Again.
That's Friday, September 30th.
8 to 9 p.m.
Here on your favorite
community radio station,
KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Portland Underground Graduate School. Classes that begin in October include How to Ally with Portland's Urban Native Americans and Cascadia Earthquakes, Live With It. Portland Underground Graduate School is also known as PUGS. Classes take place all over the Portland metro area. Information about registering, future classes, and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
What would you have instead?
This is it.
There comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought, tell the world how you cast your vote.
And good morning, good morning. It's about 4 minutes after 8 o'clock in the morning, and you are listening to your very own community radio station, KBOO. I'm Ani. This is Positively Revolting Talk Radio, and my generally here, usually cohort, is actually not able to join us this morning, and so I have brought in stalwart, thanks for being roped into this so early in the morning, Teresa Mitchell from Press Watch and other great KBOO things. Thanks, Teresa.
You're welcome. I enjoy being Lynn. I enjoy being a Lynn.
And you know, we wish Lynn the best, and thank you again for joining us this week here on Positively Revolting, where we were actually going to have discussions with Teresa Rayford and Maria Garcia. Unfortunately, neither of them could be here either. This is, you know, you ever wake up in the morning and you're like, wow, this isn't the day I thought it was.
What kind of surprise will this day bring?
It's like a big box of surprises, really tied up in a big ribbon.
So,
yeah.
So improvise, Ani. You're on.
Yes. Okay. So that's the thing.
3, 2, 1.
That's the thing. And we will have a couple folks calling in this morning. And at the moment, we actually are joined with Brush by phone. Good morning, Brush.
Good morning, Ani.
Hey, it's good to hear from you. I know that there are some exciting things going on that you wanted to give folks an update on around the Social Justice Action Center. Do you want to explain to people what that is?
Sure. So the Social Justice Action Center is a community space in the heart of Portland, in the inner southeast, and it's an open forum for groups, particularly grassroots and you know, movement-building organizations, to meet, to have events, to build culture, and also to interact with each other. And one of our real focuses is on providing a ongoing, permanent foothold and a community-owned space in the heart of Portland, even if, as it's gentrifying, as it's changing so much, as so much of the community organizing that has been so important for the city is being either you know, evicted or pushed to the margins of the town. This is a place where people, even if they are now having to live further out, can come and more accessibly meet together and plan and organize for the long term. And yeah, so we've been operating for about a year and have been able to really build kind of an infrastructure, build a board of awesome organizers that represent the different grassroots and particularly people of color and marginalized organizing that is our core. And it's been really exciting so far. And now we're in a situation where we are in a position to buy the building, to protect it permanently in this way. But we do have this fundraising need that we're in the midst of. You all just finished your fall drive. So
it's true.
I know you know what it's like.
And, you know, I mean, that's the thing. It does take resources. It does take some cash to actually effectively organize movements for social change. It's just sort of the bottom line. We live in this world, in this capitalist economy, and try as we might to change it, fix it, and turn it over. It's where we are right now. And so actually securing this building for the community's use is, yeah, it's going to cost some money, but the benefits seem pretty tremendous.
They really do. And, you know, I guess I would say one thing about that, which is that, you know, as much as the capitalist rigging of the money economy is, you know, structures our lives and is this seemingly inevitable dynamic, there is a way that I've found that people coming together to support something can have a collective, can have a real democratic aspect to it, even when it does involve money, you know? And that's one of the things that I've really appreciated about this campaign and about the center as a whole. You know, we've been able to, even though, yes, we do need to make X number of dollars a month in order to pay our expenses, and we do have this need right now for a one-time, you know, wad of cash in order to be able to make this happen. But the way we're doing it is to get all these different kinds of people together, and whether you can give $10 or whether you can give $1,000, what we're really focusing on is the relationships and on the sense that this is a community effort and we're all in it together. And so, and even if you can't give money, there's a lot of need for volunteers to help run the building, you know, maintenance and coordinating people, the schedules, and also in organizing in helping different groups figure out how they can use the space best, and having events that really reach out to the communities that need them or might be interested in them if they knew about it. So there's a lot of ways for us to be involved, and what we're really trying to do is to have this campaign be something that, even while it does have this money aspect, is also an organizing.
Absolutely, because you know, again, pulling people together to do great things. You know, funding is important, but that actual coming together to support positive change in our community is something. You know, we often come together to come against something, right? To counter something, and I am always excited when there's actually efforts to do something positive that also. Are being focused on.
Yeah. You know, Marco Mejia, who's been one of our coordinating committee members for a long time and is on the board, he has really inspired me with the way he articulates this. And he was on the evening news last week. And
yes.
The way he has been talking about it is you know, and I think this is, you know, he's told stories about some of his experiences in Latin American organizing where there is this understanding that we're against something, and that can really bring diverse strands together. But at the same time, there's always this the sense that it's at least as important to build the culture of what we're for, you know, and to recognize that when there's differences and divergences, it's not just, okay, who's going to have the better strategy to defeat the enemy? It's also, how can we weave those differences into a greater understanding of what we're for, of what we can build together. How do we look at the conflicts and the tensions that might exist as potential sources of strength, as we learn from each other, as we have diverse approaches that we can observe? And how do we focus on cultural events? How do we focus on building long-term generational movements that enrich the whole person and build our social power in a positive aspect, at least as much as what we're against? And so, I, you know, that's part of the vision of the space as well. Is, you know, yes, it's just a meeting space, but we're also inviting groups, and we've had some real people who've been stepping into this, groups that have been stepping in, to for the groups to own the space and to run it and to coordinate with each other and to start to develop programs that bring a variety of different grassroots movements into conversation with each other, into collaboration, into sharing resources, whether those are skills or they are, you know, tangible resources, or whether they are approaches to the work we're doing, and to have kind of these encounters where different movements are able to build long-term relationships with each other. So that's an aspect of the space that is, you know, still in its early stages, but we're really, really focusing on. And we've got a grant out to hire a community organizer, you know, we're really looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Yeah. So the event next week, can you go ahead and just some details, the where and the when and the all of the how?
Totally. So we've been in this capital campaign. We're coming into the final week. It's $20,000 is our goal, and that's both a lot of money and not that much. But we're almost halfway. But we've got halfway to go. We've had an incredible, like, early in the campaign a couple weeks ago. We found out that because of the support from everybody, the community members willing to match every donation up to our goal. So that means that every dollar that anyone gives is doubled immediately. And so
that's really fantastic.
It's amazing. It was such a relief and a blessing when we found out about that. And so we're really just encouraging people, no matter what you have, to be able to offer it. And we're kind of coming into this final stage. And on Tuesday evening, we're going to be having our final fundraiser party, and where we're going to celebrate all of the great work people have done, and also it's our last push to get over that hump. And so we're going to have awesome speakers. Margot Black, who might be able to call in later on the show, is going to be able to be there from Portland Tenants United. Robert Pelt, Umatilla and Siletz, tribal member and ceremonial leader and a real amazing man who's the president of our board, will be there to speak. And we're going to have Johnny Cool, who's a up-and-coming young artist who's actually been experiencing some of the impacts of so many groups that are being forced out of the center of town because of rent hikes. He's going to be able to perform and speak a little bit, and we're going to have a number of other people just sharing. One of the focuses of the event is to just recognize that this dynamic of so many community organizations no longer being able to operate in the core of town, how damaging that is if it continues, and on the flip side, the opportunity that we have and the need to seize those opportunities when we can to stay there, to stay in Portland. I mean, you know, this wave of gentrification isn't the final word, but if all of the community organizing that has been done over decades in Portland is kind of shut down or sidelined, it's going to be a lot slower for us to kind of rebuild when the conditions are really ripe again. So anyway, so that's what we're going to be gathering people. We're going to have food. We're going to have a silent auction. An amazing organizer has stepped forward to kind of gather a bunch of items, and it's going to be maybe a raffle with balloons, and it's going to be really fun. And we encourage people to come. So that's 5:30. Doors open, and at 6:30 we'll start with the conversation and the program. And that's at the Social Justice Action Center at 400 Southeast 12th Avenue on the southeast side.
There. So it's 12th and Oak, right across from the St. Francis Church.
It is. And and I guess that maybe I'll just let folks know they can also learn more on our website, which is sjacpdx.org. That's sjacpdx.org. You know, we have an online crowdfunding site, and we also have, a bunch more information and testimonials from groups that have used the space. And really encourage folks who are on Facebook. That's facebook.com/sjacpdx. And really encourage folks to spread the word. And, every dollar that we get is also a sign to the broader community that this is supported and important for people.
Absolutely. And your crowdfunding page, that's at where?
It's youcaring.org. That's youcaring. youcaring.org/sjac. SJAC.
Okay, and I've also posted some of this stuff to our Positively Revolting page on our Facebook, the Facebook site, the Positively Revolting site on Facebook, I guess is the other way to say that. Anyway, it's there, and thank you so much, Brush, for being available this morning to give an update on this really important community feature.
Totally. Yeah, it's been really amazing and exciting, and you know, there's a lot to talk about just in terms of what's happening in Portland, you know, over the last few years. And I think I guess I just want to really encourage us all to recognize that as easy as it is to get really motivated by how bad things are, it can also be easy to get unmotivated and to get kind of throw our hands in the air. And at the same time, this is a moment in the country and in Portland in which some of these contradictions, I guess is an old word to use, are becoming really, really visible. And if we can combine that awareness of how stark the need is and the challenges are with these really positive infrastructural pieces, then we're going to be in a crucial position to be able to respond to the ever more regular crises that emerge. On the other hand, if our focus is purely on, oh my God, if Trump is elected, I'm going to run to Canada, then it becomes a lot harder for us to respond effectively.
Yeah, I think that really we can't stress that point enough. It's, you know, dire political times. And I've talked to a number of people recently who really are just about to lose heart. It's like, okay, we haven't been jaded, or maybe jaded around the edges, but now full on, you know.
Yeah.
And it's so very important, because that is actually... that is actually not helping anyone, especially the people feeling it. You know, the antidote is actually action and positive action, doing something good in our communities. This is a great example of that, Brush. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thank you, Annie.
Yeah, for sure. And so that's the Social Justice Action Center. And again, I did post... to our Facebook page. You can find Positively Revolting on Facebook, and find the Social Justice Action Center page there as well, or a link to it. And yeah, it's, again, a positive thing happening in our communities in a time that feels so very, well, not particularly positive. And that, I think, is the segue now to what I would love to engage you with, dear listeners. But wait, before I do that, there's a second update by phone. Good morning, Teresa. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Arnie. How are you?
I'm doing okay. Thank you so much for being able to join us by phone this morning.
I can't turn down your invitation.
So for listeners, this is Teresa Rayford from Hands Up PDX. Thank you again. You have been a very, very busy person. You're one of the busiest activists I know. And so if we could just get a little update. I mean, this week has seen some fairly dramatic actions from you. And I'd love to just hear a little update about what happened at City Hall this week, for one thing.
Oh, absolutely. And I mean, it's been a crazy week. So
yeah.
The anniversary, so you know I protest because my nephew was killed in community violence back in September of 2010. The anniversary was actually on the 26th. And so Friday, you know, it was my birthday, and I figured, you know, we've been out here protesting. I've been activating our community to be, you know, civically engaged since my nephew died. And I was invited to come to the gang task force meeting to present the work that we've done for Don't Shoot Portland in honor of my nephew for his anniversary. And that's when everything went downhill. I should have never taken the bait, but I went there, you know, thinking that I was going to be able to honor him and talk about our work and our community action plan. And actually, when I got to the meeting over at the Northeast Precinct, they had a crowd full of room, a crowd that was just packed, of people that they had called like that morning and the night before. And they not only didn't allow us to honor my nephew, they basically ambushed us with an anti-SRO campaign because we had put out a petition requesting that we have armed and unarmed officers removed from our schools. And so that just channeled a whole another type of energy. And I could see what was happening because we had a rally that was, you know, planned right across the street at Bamford Square. And so, you know, going into the gang task force meeting at Northeast Precinct, you don't usually see motorcycle cops and bike cops and SWAT, you know, riot trucks set up that early in the morning. But they had them. And it was just like, wow, did they bring all this here for me to make the speech, or did they bring it for our protest? And they brought it for our protest. They knew that we had families across the street. They knew we had children across the street. They knew that they had welcomed me to honor my nephew, who was a victim of violence in our community. And they took all of the energy that we were bringing as community to say, hey, we're an asset, and this is what community is doing. And, you know, the All Lives Matter people that are saying, worry about black-on-black crime, here's a significant opportunity to see what is being done by people in our community that have that same focus.
Right.
You know, not the All Lives Matter focus, but the Black Lives Matter, and we don't like community violence.
Right.
They sent the cops out to attack families. We marched for miles. Our intention was to march through our community. We ended up marching all the way down to City Hall. And before we got there, I don't know if you've seen the videos on the Oregonian or some of the ones that are streaming, but we were not only hit with bikes, we were having families pepper sprayed and hit with bamarams or whatever those batons are that they have.
Yeah.
And so we ended up going to the City Hall. It was like, okay, well, City Hall's still open. It's pretty early in the day. Let's go to City Hall. Let's go talk to the mayor about this, because we've had incidents like this. We know that the independent police review is in there, but it was so horrible that day that I figured, you know, let's take this to the mayor. It's probably still some sessions going on, and we can take our demonstration into our space and give our petition to our government. And we got there, and it was just really ridiculous.
I want to just stop right there for a moment, and just the power of those words. You took this demonstration directly to the mayor's office because you're seeking to redress your grievances directly to our elected officials that are there to, hypothetically represent us in some way.
Hypothetically is right.
Right.
We were treated like second-class citizens in there. He wanted us to come into the chamber council. I told the youth that that was a power move, that that was appropriating him to sit above us and speak down to us, and that from what we had went through as a community together, that we needed him to come and stand with us. We had to wait until, you know, after 6 o'clock that evening. You know, we watched Amanda Fritz and other people sneak out past us without even addressing us with any type of concern. But eventually, when the mayor came out, it was a reckless attitude. He had been sitting in the room with the youth, telling them that he would come out if they could make me shut up. You know, he came out talking about vandalism, that he knows, based on our activism, we've never defaced any property. And we're here talking about children that are being killed. And then we're talking about how the Portland police and sheriffs were just, like, beating up on peaceful protesters. But he wanted to bring up vandalism. So we ended up, you know, listening to him tell us that we were going to get a meeting with him on Tuesday. So we went away. We figured, okay, we were already planning a rally at the city council, at City Hall for Tuesday to promote voters' registration day. So now we'll just go ahead and get there, and we'll have our rally, and we'll go in and, you know, petition ITR and give them investigative information. We'll meet with the mayor at 4, as he told us he would, and we'll go ahead and get these things behind us. He didn't show up. He went on radio that morning, and he told people, him and Mike Marshman, the chief of police, told people that they were expecting such a big crowd that they're going to move our meeting to address our grievances to a church in Northeast Portland. And we know historically that that is a safe place for our local leaders, because a lot of federal dollars go into those spaces so that they can accommodate adjusting whatever they need for, you know, propaganda. You know, if the black community is having a problem, we'll talk about black-on-black crime. So let's go to the church if the protesters have an issue, because then we can talk about black-on-black crime, or just act like it doesn't really have a problem. I don't know what the whole idea of moving it to Northeast, when he knew we had a planned press conference at City Hall. It's very disingenuous. I'm glad he's on his way out.
Disingenuous was exactly the word in my head.
Chambers. Yeah, we did the thing on Tuesday. We ended up spending the night there.
Yep.
So that we could go ahead and provide testimony about the collective bargaining agreement, because, of course, it had just came out that Friday. And, you know, being brutalized by the police, we said, okay, well, immediately everybody asked, what can we do? And for me, it was like, whoa, let me give them some information about what's really going on, because a lot of people that protest, sometimes they don't even know how influential they are to policy. And so, you know, we had 24 hours to discuss it out there in Tent City in front of City Hall. And the next morning we went into the chambers and we delayed the collective bargaining process so that people can be more included in this process. And hopefully we'll get some language that we can adopt over the next couple of weeks and use it to create a better policy in regards to connecting with people of color and people who protest, you know?
Well, and I just want to underscore the importance of really checking out the collective bargaining agreements between the city and the cops, because we find time and time again that even if the city says, oh, cops were out of line, which is rare, right? It is super rare that the city goes that far. But even when they have, we find that the police union says, the contract says we can't.
Well, they have mandates and phraseology that's basically utilized by the Independent Police Review to exonerate officers. They apply language that's not used in the investigation. Let's say that you tell me what happened when the police pepper sprayed you. I'll hear your words, And instead of applying your words, I'll, you know, refer to the directives for their training, and I'll apply that language so that you will be exonerated. And the reason that's being done is because even in the independent police review, they don't have the teeth. They don't have what they need in order to bring forth a true investigation. Everything is handled by the internal affairs. You know, so the police are policing themselves, they're investigating themselves, they're reporting back on the issues that them themselves may think that them themselves have in these conflicts, and that's just not right. And even in this new collective bargaining agreement, they influence policy, and it's in the language. And that should never happen. You that is like damn near criminal. I think I heard one of the people testifying that is reflective of a criminal balance. You know, it's taken away the whole value of that whole bargaining agreement.
Right.
It's like it's giving them ultimate power, which they already have in this city.
What's coming up for you next? You know, organizationally, politically, where are you focused?
Well, organizationally, now? We just had a board meeting on, we cleaned up our tents on Wednesday, and I went to a board meeting for Don't Shoot Portland, where we just got our new board. I have two lawyers, an architect, and two business owners. And I'm going to go ahead and make that board very, very strong and reflective of the work that we've already been doing. This Sunday, we have a follow-up event that we're inviting political leaders and people running for candidacy to come out and have it. It's going to be moderated by myself and Greg McKelvey, focusing on the language in the collective bargaining agreement, again, so that we can encourage people to be civic-minded, but also to be engaged and educated on what's happening. But I at this point, I need to keep my butt alive. I mean, we just shut down a $10 million contract that would have helped the Portland Police Union hire old officers back on the force. And we've known that historically we haven't had good police forces here, so that would be to the disadvantage of a lot of people. We went to Multnomah County yesterday, petitioned the commissioners to do more audits and investigations on the lack of response in regards to hate crimes and police calls in our community, the criminalization and the systemic language that they use to get federal dollars that basically allows gatekeeping in our communities, where you have reflective leadership, but there's no connect to the people. We're trying to dismantle all of that, because all of those things appropriate the oppression that people are dealing with. And I just wanted to say, I just looked at a report from COIN about our visit at Multnomah County yesterday to petition the board. And they basically, their propaganda that they put out, it was ridiculous. It basically said that we went in there to make complaints about racism that exists in Multnomah County, and that the board said, oh, no, we don't have these issues. We've seen no escalation in any of these problems that they're bringing to us. And it's the fact that the blacks in Multnomah County are killing each other. And they even gave them, I think they got two graphs from the Portland Police Department. And that's not even what we went in there for. We went in there letting them know that when we call about crimes, let's say sexual crimes, let's say violence, let's say anything, we're criminalized when those calls come. When our families are looking for support from any local support systems that provide outreach services, we're interrogated. Right. We're surveyed. Everybody's a mandatory reporter. It's not even safe to reach out for help for minorities or minor priorities in Multnomah County. And those are the issues. They're talking about all of this crime that we're, you know, they say B-on-B crime. I have known white supremacists that are letting us know that they do play target practice with us. We don't have the ability to even have those things investigated, because guess what? When the Ku Klux Klan does their recruiting, when hate crimes happen, we're told to ignore it. We're told that we're being defensive. We're told that we're being complainers. And if you look at the COIN interview, it's basically the same thing, and it's shameful, and Portlandia should be ashamed of itself.
You know, and it, this at a time when just less than a month ago, a black teenager was deliberately killed, deliberately ran over by a couple of white supremacists.
Yeah, his parents were with us yesterday. That's what makes COIN's interview even more sickening. His parents were there. Christopher Kalonji's parents were there. Do you know, Larnell Bruce's dad and his aunt and his sister were sitting right there in Multnomah County when we were talking about these things. So for the response from their leadership to be, we don't have these problems, there's not been a spike. There's not an uptick. Everybody knows that Trump's rhetoric is pushing an agenda and that we know there's people that are picking it up and running with it. But we don't have a problem in Whitelandia, according to our leaders. The biggest problem we have here is black-on-black crime.
I really want to underscore that point. It's something that we've seen historical precedent for. When we get a demagogue who spews vitriol and hate speech, it's not just the words that he's saying, it's what they do with people who have similar thoughts, right? It validates them and it spurs them to action. And it's really kind of, I gotta say, there's some correlation there with brown shirts and Europe, say 65 years ago or so. I'm just, history. It's a thing.
Well, when you have leaders disregarding it, again, it validates the opportunity for people to go forward with it, especially here.
Yeah.
You have the leaders saying, we don't have a problem, they're our problem. Well, guess what that tells those crazy vigilantes?
Yeah.
And we know we have them. Any news organization here that does any story about any black person knows that the comments are always very devaluing and humiliating. Come on.
Yeah.
And so are we thinking that all of these people that are commenters are just trolls? Or are we going to take in the fact that we have a very misogynist society here and that it is built that way? It's centered around it. I had somebody ask me one time, they said, it seems like some of the leaders that you guys are pointing out in the black community are fighting for the opportunity to be the pawn or the token. And I said, it's the only safe place. It's the place where you're regarded as an actual human. Mm. And so some of us don't have the courage of others to sacrifice whatever they have in order to make it more dignified presence for all of us. But we don't knock them down either. We need them to turn forces in the build within,
Right.
And that's what we've been out here doing actively with this movement. But there seems to be a just serious disregard. It's just driving me crazy.
And for people that want to support you and get involved with the movement, how do people do that?
They can go to a new website that we set up. It's called don'tshootportland.com. There's a donate button on there. It's very badly needed. I meet hundreds of people all the time that come to our protest, thousands of people even. And we've always encouraged people to donate to various causes that are out there. We've always hit the hashtag Black Lives Matter. And for whatever reason, a lot of people are thinking that when they donate to Black Lives Matter, that they're actually supporting us. And the fact is that we've never received any funding from any black organization that have received funding for this movement or for the work. And so locally, we need your support. We need support to come directly to Don't Shoot Portland. We've had, we just set the account up last month after MRG gave us an initial grant. To help us with, just archiving some of the work that we've done. But it wasn't clearly, it nearly wasn't enough. It lasted maybe a week because we pay our volunteers finally for, years of work. And they gave us a really awesome anniversary event for Mike Brown. And so everybody got their return on investment. But we need to be invested in. We need people to continue helping us out and to be very vigilant in speaking out.
And I'm going to go ahead and put the link to don'tshootportland.com on Positively Revolting's Facebook page. Once again, more things that people can get involved with to make a difference in this world and especially in this city. I also think it's just super important. I was talking with another volunteer here a couple of days ago who was looking at me and saying, people, they just don't get that there can be like a couple of different radical black organizations, right?
Yeah.
White people think, if there are black people working on this issue, they must all be in the same group because there can't possibly be.
We're just monolithic people.
Right?
Lab, right?
And so I really appreciate you pointing out that just because somebody has supported Black Lives Matter, which is also super important. It doesn't mean that that they've supported Don't Shoot Portland specifically, and that,
right.
that the groups are not really interchangeable. I mean, you know, obviously sharing common goals, but different groups.
Right, and the thing is that we consciously supported the building of Black Lives Matter nationally because we had to. When you're out there on the front line and your only communication is your cell phone and your tweets, and you're out there fighting for human rights and dignity, and you're able to use hashtags to communicate, you're going to elevate every piece of language that's valuable to be a vehicle for this fight. And in doing the elevation, we don't seem, you know, like, we were hoping that people would do their research. We were hoping that people would find out what was happening in their community, connect with what's going on in their community. But for a lot of people, it's easier to just buy a T-shirt or, you know, show up to a protest. And that's just not enough. If we want our children to have a better future in this world, we all have to get active, seriously.
And coming up, I wanted to just ask one more thing about conversations. Are you going forward with the second Saturday of the month conversations?
Absolutely. We have another one coming up at the Revolution Cafe. We'll have the information up on the Facebook page pretty soon. I'll also be posting the event that's coming up this Sunday. That's going to be, you know, speaking about collective bargaining. And we have, like, Joanne Hardesty and a couple of other people that are going to be on the panel, and myself and Greg McKelvey will be moderating it. So I think that's going to be really exciting, but a lot going on. I don't think we stop. We have a unity protest that's happening in Vancouver tomorrow, meeting today at Lincoln High School. I'm going to be very excited about that. I had to move it around a little bit for you, and I didn't mind at all. Thank you.
Well, and thank you for moving things around and joining us this morning.
All right. Well, thank you for the opportunity, and everybody have a great weekend. Be safe.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And that was Teresa Rayford from Don't Shoot Portland, involved in oh so many good things. And again, I did post the link to don'tshootportland.com on our Facebook page, just in case you can't remember don'tshootportland.com later on today. You can always check out Positively Revolting's Facebook page and find out about many things that we've talked about on the air and many things we're concerned about that we don't have time to talk about on the air because, you know, the world's on fire. And it is so important to get active and to really be proactive in putting that fire out and, you know, helping the world be a better place. That's sort of what we're about here on Positively Revolting, the show that talks about revolting in a positive manner. 503-231-8187 is the number to call this morning. We would love to hear from you and actually engage you in what you're interested in changing, what you're interested in turning around. Brush was talking about the importance of being for something and not just always being against something. And this is a conversation that we have returned to a few times here on Positively Revolting because it is so important to actually put forth a vision together that we can support, that we can build towards. And I think that that is something that we are missing quite often in the left, in progressive movements. So I would love to hear your thoughts about what it is you are focusing on, what it is you are concentrating on. We have so many important issues. And sometimes I hear from folks who are like on the edge of burnout and despair. There's so much. I just don't even know where to start. It's overwhelming. So I'm not going to do anything. That's not helpful, is it, Teresa?
Well, I certainly understand it's only human to feel that way from time to time. There's a lot happening. And listening to Teresa, I was thinking about the framing of right-wing groups. For years and years, I think we were able to say, oh, you know, the problem, we don't need to focus on those right-wing groups because the problem is, you know, and the problem really is white supremacy. And white people need to get over themselves and to destroy whiteness. And so I think that was a pretty good strategy for years ago. And now we're in the post-Trump era. And the alt-right is a thing. And the alt-right is rising, apparently. It's a coin a term coined in 2008 by Richard Spencer, who heads the white nationalist think tank known as the National Policy Institute, to describe a loose set of far-right ideals centered on white identity and the preservation of Western civilization.
Because that's been such a good idea to begin with.
Which is a nice way of saying it's a bunch of...
Don't get me started.
Yeah, it's a nice way of saying it's a bunch of racists and white supremacists. And so... We still have this frame that those people are just kind of kooky, or maybe they're just feeling kind of crushed and we should let them. My attitude towards the alt-right and towards the Klan and the whole bunch is that these are terrorist death squads. And I can prove each of those three words. They are terrorists, they are death squads, and they should be treated as such. But when we're talking about terrorism in the United States, we're led to talk about these mostly imaginary and insurgent groups from far across the sea. And that's a fantasy. And it's such a fantasy that the FBI has to go around and convince people to do harsh things like the, well, like Mohammed Mahmoud here in Portland, who was set up to...
Set off an imaginary bomb,
yes, at the lighting of the Christmas tree a few years ago. There have been so many incidents like that. But the real terrorism is right here in front of us. And we don't call it terrorism. We don't call it death squads because it targets people that the culture doesn't care about, that white people don't care about. And that needs to change.
They target threats to the status quo. Right. It is very pointedly maintaining a specific power structure, and that power structure exists because racism, sexism, and other oppressive ideas and behaviors allow it to exist.
True that. So the number to call is 503-231-8187, 503-231-8187. I was looking at the websites Breaking Brown and The Roots, and the problems that Teresa was describing are all over the nation, of course. Looking at the headline roll on Breaking Brown, Flint's right to sue over lead poisoning revoked by state of Michigan. White Louisiana residents outraged at the firing of police chief who blame Obama for the war on cops. Investigation underway after black motorcyclists allegedly trapped and shot dead by D.C. police. All over the nation, this sort of thing is going on.
Right. Let's go ahead and talk to Mike. Good morning, Mike. You're on the air. 503-231-8187, the number to call if you, too, would like to join us. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning. Thanks for the show again.
Sure.
I just want to put a call out. You don't have to do what I'm doing, but I wish everyone would be on the watch out and on the alert for the symbols and the dog whistle, and it's seemingly all on the highways and shopping centers, parking lots, and just out in the country, along country roads in Clark County. I'm sure in Portland as well, around the outskirts.
But the symbols
small minority, there's a small minority of white supremacists, and they're showing their colors.
That's a good point.
I noticed this, but we're talking big trucks usually, jacked up. And you know what they say about guys with big, jacked up, oversized trucks. But
true that.
Well, let's identify some of those symbols.
Seriously, I'm taking pictures with my phone and so forth.
Yeah,
Mike, every chance I get.
Go ahead and unpack that a little bit. What are you specifically noticing?
Yeah. There's a lot going on, and I've been taking pictures of and noticing this for quite a while now.
But pictures of what?
I want you to be. The last 6 months, I would say more and more.
I want you to be a little more specific about what symbols you're seeing, because I too have noticed this uptick. I think that it's been pervasive as we've watched what's happening in the national scene politically. That it has given that go ahead to people with. How do we say hating tendencies? What specifically are you noticing? Because some folks listening maybe have not been so indoctrinated. Maybe, you know, they don't recognize a dog whistle for what it is.
Absolutely. It's so clear to me, firstly, because I am a small independent contractor. I drive all around the county, Clark County, and in Portland, mostly Clark County. rural as well as neighborhoods and in the city every day.
Uh-huh.
I have a different client every day, so I'm around.
Uh-huh.
And also when I'm done working, if I have a chance to stop at a park or something and eat the rest of my lunch, that sort of thing, well, I'm seeing gatherings of what back in the day in the 80s I would call skinheads. But these guys are anywhere from 20 to 50.
Uh-huh.
Trucks, big trucks, and almost always black. But I've seen a couple of exceptions lately. They're proudly or inconspicuously showing Confederate flag colors.
I was going to say Confederate flags are the thing I've noticed the most. Yeah.
Well, let me lay a couple on you that I've noticed as a bus driver. There's the 14 and 88 memes. These are openly, they're not so openly Nazi symbols. The swastika is banned in Germany. But here in the U.S., the swastika is too much of a tip-off, so you find the number 14 put up in graffiti. That's a reference to the so-called 14 words, a phrase coined by American white separatist David Lane, and the words are, "We must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children." The meaning between 88 is, 8 is the eighth letter of the alphabet, both in English and German, and so this is HH, and you can probably guess that stands for Heil Hitler. So when you see 14 and 1488 and 88 and HH, these are dangerous ideologies and people who are angry and looking to act on their racism.
Oh, well, that's good information. See, I'm not tuned in as much as you are about that information. I just know what I see.
Yeah, and
I'm
why
sensitive enough to notice it. Okay, here's another thing. A lot of short hair or bald.
Uh-huh.
Okay, a lot of steroids.
Uh-huh.
A lot of steroids. The times at parks when I've seen them in groups, small groups, still a minority, but they're loud and boisterous sometimes, and they're calling to each other like they're a group, like a gang, like a football team on the field. Well, even football players on the field don't act like that when they're off the field.
Right.
Okay, so that's another thing. Black T-shirts with thin white stencil diagrams of different symbols.
Huh.
And I'll be looking for the 14, and I'll be looking for the other one, the 8?
88, yeah.
I'll be looking for that, but I can't recall exactly.
Well, and I got to say, I
get
have...
Get photos. Be safe.
Yeah.
Be safe. Yeah. Don't get too risky. And if you think there is a weird gathering and people are being intimidated, call the police, please. And the sheriffs are great out here.
And you're in Clark County. To be clear on that.
Right.
Mike, hey, thank you so much for your call this morning.
So, my question to you,
and
this is why I'm calling for my own personal thing, for that getting the word out, is who would I give this collection of photos to? And should I send them digitally to the what authority, this authority, that authority? I mean, these are gangs. These are... dangerous, and also they are on a federal level and a state level classified as the most dangerous groups of terrorists in the U.S.
I would say send them to SPLC. Send them to the SPLC Southern Poverty Law Center. That's SPLCenter.org.
And they keep track of this sort of stuff nationally. And while you were describing what you were seeing, and I'm realizing, I also have seen similar things. There was a car downtown that I passed a few weeks ago now. And when I say a few weeks, I mean 2 months. That was actually covered in white supremacist graffiti and the number 88 all over the place. I should know a local place that we can gather this information. I've wondered about it, and I actually don't know. So allow me to redouble my efforts to figure out a local collection source for this sort of information, because you're absolutely right. We do need to be aware of hate crimes and hate groups that are active in our area, and even the unaffiliated lone haters that are active in our area, and that we should keep ourselves and each other informed so that we can stay safer together and proactive. So, Mike, thank you very much for your call this morning. You are spurring me to research. And let's go ahead, 503-231-8187, the number to call this morning. You are listening to Positively Revolting. This is KBOO.
Can I do a promotion?
Your community radio station. Why? Yes, I think I have it in front of me.
Oh, well, in that case, go for that.
Written by the hand of Kathleen Stevenson, her very own self. Portland's area weather, increasing clouds with a high near 65 today. And coming up, at 9 o'clock, you can hear more of Teresa Mitchell because she's hardly had
all Mitchell here all the time.
But political perspectives this morning brings us Teresa's interview with journalist and author Susan Faludi about her new book, In the Dark Room, her inquiry into the meaning of identity in the modern world and into her own saga involving her 76-year-old father who underwent sex reassignment surgery.
Surprise!
All right. And at 9:30, Scott Horton interviews Nasser Arabi on the bad reasons for U.S. to support Saudi war on Yemen. Chris Andre will host Air Cascadia at 10 o'clock. You get headlines, interviews, and commentary, and so much attitude packed into a mere 15 minutes. And at 10:15, Flashpoints features an extended interview with the presidential and vice presidential nominees of the Peace and Freedom Party, Gloria LaRiva and Dennis Banks. At 11 o'clock on Radio Zine, host Dan Johnson speaks with Max Miscotti, the director of Sage Metro Portland, working to enhance the lives of the older LGBT community members and the upcoming Sage Expo. You know, I think that's us, Teresa. We're getting older, even as we speak.
No, not me.
Anyway, and we also, of course, would love to thank you, generous KBOO members, for your support during our fall membership drive. Thank you, thank you, thank you. If you missed that opportunity, fear not. You can still join KBOO and support the work of community radio. Here at KBOO, you just go to kboo.fm and click the donate button. Let's go ahead and talk to Michelle. Michelle, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Yes,
you're on.
Okay, well, so the project that I'm working on for a positive influence is I have a program called Let's Share Housing. And so it matches homeowners with home seekers. And our age range is, we say, anywhere from 18 to 80.
Uh-huh.
So we encourage intergenerational living if people choose to live that way. But people can group themselves however they want.
Uh-huh. And so this is a sort of a clearinghouse of folks looking for shared housing. Is that what I'm hearing?
And, you know, the issues with the cost for rent here in the Portland area has become so extreme that I'm attracting actually a lot of people who, you know, are still working, who are still have been able to afford their own places until, you know, their rent gets jacked up or, you know, they're just no longer able to make ends meet. So we are launching a website this next month. It's supposed to launch tomorrow, but, you know, sometimes you have to tweak things a little bit. But in the next couple weeks, within that time period, we will have our website launched so that people can go on there, create a profile, look at whatever else is on there, see if they find anything of interest to them. And then there is a small fee to contact people. It kind of works like a dating site that way. We're charging $29.95 for a three-month opportunity to view the website as, you know, as many times as you want and contact as many people. But another really great thing that we're doing that I've really have enjoyed is we do face-to-face. We were doing it through the meetup.com website, but we won't be once we launch our own website. But it's kind of a meet-and-greet opportunity for people to come and just sit down face-to-face. And our groups have been sized where everybody can
right.
go around and talk about what their situation is, what they can afford, where they're looking. And then
all
we
right.
do it. Lifestyle exercise and go out for happy hours. So it's a really fun interaction.
Thanks very much for calling in with that information this morning, Michelle. We are just about at the end of show. So thank you very much for that call. And a lot, you know, it's Now we have actually callers that we're not going to get to this week, but there is so much going on. It is important, I got to say, to get active. Don't you think, Teresa?
I think so. This show has kind of reminded me of my own personal big parade, which is how well things are framed by the owning class, by the ruling class, so that we cannot take action on them. I was thinking specifically of the example of taking alt-right and terrorist groups like the Klan and the newer groups as just a quirky, you know, white people rural problem. It's not, it's terrorism. So I want to reframe that.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. And thanks for joining us this morning on Positively Revolting. We'll be back next week, and we hope you will too. Stay tuned to KABU and the radio zine, the incomparable radio zine, with more of Teresa Mitchell coming up next.
Comes a time when every second, every day, when every action, every thought will tell the world how you cast your vote.
Last Monday, the Old Mole Hour at 9 a.m. on KABU interviewed Teresa Rayford on police violence and the reluctance to investigate white racist vigilantism and attacks on black citizens. The interview was interrupted by continued technical problems. The interview will be replayed this coming Monday at 9 a.m. on the Old Mole.
KABU Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Resolution Fest, October 1st through 8th in Portland. Resolution Fest is a week-long celebration of the people and communities reimagining the landscape of the tech industry. Over 8 days, the intersections of technology, identity, culture, community service, education, social change, collaboration, and creativity will be examined. There will be documentary screenings, a Women Who Code Portland Networking Night, a Hacker Lounge, and much, much more. Again, that's Resolution Fest, October 1st through 8th, all over Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's